General election. With five members of parliament returned unopposed on nomination day, Singaporeans are set to elect another 92 MPs and decide their government for the next 5 years. A GE 2025 unfolds amid rising global tensions between superpowers and unprecedented economic uncertainty. I'm Otelli Edwards, and you're watching The Roundtable. Over the next 90 minutes, you will hear directly from the largest parties contesting the election. How will they navigate this new world order? What policies will they champion to deal with issues such as immigration and the cost of living? Well, tonight's discussion will focus on three areas: geopolitics and the economy, immigration and jobs, and finally, the cost of living. At the end of the three rounds of question and answer, each party will be given time to deliver their wrap-up comments. As in GE 2020, we have invited the top four parties based on the number of candidates fielded. But since this time there is a tie for fourth place, there are actually five parties at the table tonight. At the round table, we have, from People's Alliance for Reform, fielding 13 candidates, Mr. Lim Tien. From Progress Singapore Party, also fielding 13 candidates, Ms. Stephanie Tan. From Red Dot United, fielding 15 candidates, Mr. Ravi Philemon. From the Workers' Party, fielding 26 candidates, Mr. Michael Tung. And from the ruling People's Action Party, Mr. Chee Hong Tan. Also at the table, a different subject matter expert for each of the three topics we are discussing. For the first topic, I'm joined by Professor Joseph Liao from the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies. Now, his research is in geopolitics and geoeconomics. I will ask the first question, and this will be a common question to all five parties. Now, my academic guest in this case, Professor Liao, will ask follow-up questions to each party. The parties will answer our questions, starting from the smallest to the largest. Well, an hour ago, we shared the questions with you so that you could be better prepared for our audience at home. Well, the time available for replies will be shared equally between the government and the opposition. The four opposition parties will share half the time, and the ruling party will get the other half of the time. There are timers around the studio, and your mics will be muted once your time is up. So let's start with geopolitics and the economy. My first question to all the parties. The global outlook is increasingly uncertain. It appears free trade is in decline. How do you see this impacting Singapore? And how does your party propose to help Singaporeans deal with these challenges? Well, Mr. Lim, we begin with you, and your 1 minute starts now.
Ms. Edwards, good evening, and thank you very much for the invitation tonight. It was not as if we were not given fair warning that free trade was on the decline. As early as 2022, the CEO of BlackRock already said that globalization was dead. So we were given plenty of warning. But it was a warning that was not heeded by the PAP, who kept talking about globalization. Now, what I propose to do and my party propose to do in this time is this. Instead of globalization, we must go glocalization. So we must involve the region. We cannot carry on to the drumbeat of the Americans, which led globalization. We must start to cooperate with our regional partners like the Indonesians, the Thais, the Malaysians. But sadly, our foreign policy is out of sync, and we are out of lockstep with most of them. A classic example was what happened with Ukraine when we followed.
Your time is up, Mr. Lim. Next, Ms. Tan, your 1 minute starts now.
PSP, we are aware and we do recognize the potential impact of the US tariffs on the Singapore's economy, but the exact impact is actually hard to predict. So from an economic perspective, this has shown us that Singapore cannot be overly dependent on MNCs, and we need to build up our local enterprises and innovation. At the same time, Singapore, we must maintain our trading relationships with various trading partners to hedge our risks in times of uncertainty. From a political perspective, challenges like this require what we would term as national unity through diversity, regardless of our political affiliations. We need a diversity of voices in Parliament, and like SM Lee once said himself, nobody has a monopoly on good ideas. So we need more contestation of ideas in Parliament, which cannot happen unless we have more opposition MPs who are voted into Parliament.
Next, Mr. Philemon, your 1 minute starts now.
Thank you for the opportunity. It is indeed worrying that free trade is in decline because Singapore is our price takers. But what's more worrying for me is that are we reading the right signals? Because I remember the 2016 US elections, I think we pinned all our hopes on Hillary Clinton and her winning and the hopes that we pinned on the TPP. We all know how that election went and how Trump won. And then the 2018 Malaysian election and how our former Prime Minister was eating durians with Najib. And we know how that election went. So I think we are reading the signals wrong. And that to me is very worrying. I think we need to get back on track and read the right signals and make sure that Singapore is well positioned for this change that is coming.
Mr. Tung, your 1 minute starts now.
Thank you. I think the first thing we need to think about is how to put a backstop on the impact that this retreat from trade wars is going to have on our nation. And the first thing we can look at is friendly nations that we know are still welcoming and eager to trade with us, to move into how we can deepen relationships with them. We have party to the CPTPP. We have our friends in ASEAN who we can think about how to work with them to deepen our connections with them so we can kind of lighten the impact from the realignment. But of course, there will still be some impact on the Singaporean worker who might be dislocated because of this realignment. And for them, we want to ensure that that famed trampoline that President has talked about, where they can bounce back from this difficulty, is a real lived experience. And so we've put forward ideas such as the redundancy insurance or mandatory retrenchment benefits to ensure that we are able to give these folks kind of a leg up and an ability to bounce back when they have to be dislocated as a result of this trade realignment.
Next, Mr. Chi, your 4 minutes starts now.
I think it is clear that we are entering into a more turbulent and uncertain environment. The international order is fundamentally changed, and we need to work together to move forward in this new world. Businesses, of course, are worried about tariffs, but I think what is even more troubling for them is the uncertainty. So they are unable to make investment decisions, hiring decisions, and this would then have an impact on the job market and on our workers. So as PM has said, Singaporeans need not fear. And this is because the PAP government has already started preparing, laying the foundations, preparing Singapore for this more volatile environment. Being well prepared is a hallmark of the PAP government. We rolled out a $143 billion budget this year, and part of it is to help Singaporeans to be able to cope with immediate concerns, help businesses to be able to cope with immediate concerns, but also a large part of it is to help our companies and our workers to stay competitive in this medium to longer term. Now, we have also got a task force that is set up and helmed by DPM Gunn, and I'm part of this task force. And together with Minister Desmond Lee, we're going to look at how we can grow our economy, but in a different way. We have to look at reconfiguring our trade links, our supply chains, but importantly also to seek out new opportunities for our companies and our workers. The government will continue to monitor the developments closely because this is a very fluid situation and we stand ready to do more if necessary. As in past crisis, the PAP government will have your back. Rain or shine, we will walk this journey together with all Singaporeans. Now, the next thing is that Singapore benefits from a trusted brand name. We have a very strong international reputation. And this is also what the PAP government has built up since our independence, together with all Singaporeans. We embrace an open economy. We stay connected with the world because we believe that is the best way to grow our economy. We manage our diplomacy carefully, and we have established good linkages with our neighbours and also many other like-minded countries. Mr. Tung mentioned about CPTPP. That is actually one of the free trade agreements. We have 27 altogether. We have 4 digital economy agreements. And the CPTPP Actually, if you add up all the countries there, they constitute about 30% of global GDP. The US is not part of this, but the rest of the countries constitute 30% of the global GDP. So our ease of doing business, our stability, our ability to plan long-term, our strong tripartite partnership, all these are signature Singapore attributes that investors look for. And in this more uncertain and volatile environment, our trusted brand name actually has an even higher premium. Now, finally, unlike many other countries, we are tackling this crisis from a position of strength because we have the fiscal resources and, importantly, our reserves. Our reserves have been accumulated over generations. They give our people the confidence that when we promise to support Singaporeans, we have the resources to do it. Not just for now, but also into the future, for as long as it is needed. And this is yet another hallmark of the PAP government. We are well prepared, we save for a rainy day, and we resist the temptation to spend more from the reserves unless there's a critical need. Now, we can navigate these uncharted waters if we stay together. I think that's the key point. We have our strengths, as I mentioned earlier, and for 60 years, the PAP has served Singaporeans and steered Singapore through many crises, challenging times. We have the experience and know-how to chart a course through choppy waters and to tackle the challenges with real solutions. And we have been able to do this because Singaporeans place your trust and worked with us. Place your trust in us and worked with us. And as we face these brewing storms ahead, we once again ask for your trust and support.
Now, Professor Liao, your question for PAR, please.
So, on the campaign trail, it has been suggested by your party that perhaps the impact of the Trump tariffs might have been exaggerated. In that respect, I was wondering if you can share some thoughts on how you reconcile that with the fact that Singapore is heavily reliant on global trade and the global economic system.
Mr. Lim, your 1 minute starts now.
Thank you, Professor. Professor, I would like to finish off my answer to Ms. Edwards' question earlier. What I want to do in this current state is to promote our SME and make sure that they can produce the goods that the world and the region wants. And we want a bank specially set up to finance the SMEs so that they can not only go global, they can go regional as well. Now, coming to the Trump tariffs, I see the Trump tariffs as primarily a tool to contain the rise of China. How it's going to end is beyond anyone's comprehension. We saw how Trump suspended tariffs for 90 days, all right? And I think at the end of the day, there could be a silver lining in the cloud because Singapore enjoys a low tariff. Many foreign companies are going to relocate to us. It could be a golden age for our industry, our economy, but I want to say that golden age must
be. Your time is up, Mr. Lim. Professor, your question for PSP, please.
So, given that there really is very little indication that the US and China, the competition between the two largest economies in the world, is slowing down or abating, how do you think Singaporeans should prepare for what looks like a long-drawn trade war between the two largest economies in the world?
Ms. Tan, your 1 minute starts now.
On a national level, we are of the view that we need to first take steps to diversify our economy, and that includes also strengthening our domestic capacities. And one way of which is by reducing the cost of doing business in Singapore. We have one proposal, which is for the issuance of national guidelines on rent increases for commercial properties. And we need to encourage domestic entrepreneurship and innovation. But to do that, Singaporeans must first feel financially safe to do so. And that is why PSP also has proposals to reduce the cost of living and the cost of housing, because we believe that when we relieve financial stress on Singaporeans, we will free them and give them the leeway to upskill, to reskill, and to take risks to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah. Well, moving on, Professor, your question for RDU, please.
So I believe the RDU has made the case that Singapore needs to strengthen its domestic economic foundations as a means to deal with the exacerbating trade tensions. Do you have any thoughts about specific policies that should be embarked on by the government to do this.
Mr. Philemon, your 1 minute starts now.
Thank you. Mr. Chi earlier said that the PAP will always have your back. I think the specific policy starts from that, because I think many Singaporeans have this perception that their backs are not covered. So that one specific policy to put more money into the pockets of citizens is to cut GST from 9% to 7%. That will immediately put more money into the pockets of people, and people will feel more confident, they will consume more, and it's very different from the GST cashback scheme, because that comes once or two times a year, whereas you spend GST every day, and that's painful for many Singaporeans. So I think that's one policy proposal that we must emphasize, that we must go back to the 7% GST. We must roll back the 9% GST. Thank you.
Professor Liao, your question for WP, please.
So the WP, as I understand it, has emphasized that there would actually be strategic opportunities, and Singapore should be positioned to take advantage of those opportunities, even in light of the ongoing trade war. Can you share some thoughts on what some of these opportunities could be and how Singapore can position itself precisely to take advantage of them?
Thank
Mr.
you.
Mr. Tun,
sorry.
Your 1 minute starts now.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm happy to talk about two specific opportunities. I think the first is thinking about how we can look at industries where we may have become more price competitive as a consequence of the trade war. Right? We look at industries in Singapore, for example, the semiconductor industry, where there is a chance that because of how the relative tariffs have been placed upon other nations in the region, we could actually have an advantage in this scenario to actually capture more of the market. So it's about looking at these kind of industries and seeing how we can double down a little bit more to give it the room to grow. The second, I think we have a shared purpose here around the second one, which is how we grow local SMEs, how we help create more leaders of industry in our nation. And one of the big initiatives that we put forward is an Exim Bank, to allow these companies more access to capital, easier access to capital. So as they want to grow and move into other parts of the region or the world, they have an easy way to do so. We think that's going to help seize the opportunities. We think that's the way forward.
Professor, one question for the PAP, please.
If we have a meeting with Trump tomorrow, and setting aside the Zelensky experience, how would you go about pressing Singapore's case, Singapore's interests, beyond just telling Trump that actually Americans will suffer from the trade policies that he's embarking on?
Mr. Chi, your 4 minutes starts now.
Thank you. I think the first point I would convey to Mr. Trump is that between US and China, we would not want to choose sides, because the only side that we will choose is the side of Singapore and Singaporeans. We act in our national interest. We have strong ties with the US in defense and security, and the US is also a large investor here in Singapore and in the region. China is one of our largest trading partners, so both are important to us. And for Singapore to survive, we must continue to maintain our relevance and our credibility with both countries, and in fact with the rest of the world. And because we have been consistent, we have been principled and reliable, they know that when Singapore takes a stand, it is not because we are doing it at the behest of somebody else, but because we have done our own calculation and we are acting in our long-term national interest. So that's the first point I will make to Mr. Trump. The second point is that we would like the US to remain engaged in Asia. As I mentioned, the US is a major investor. There are many US companies, including a semiconductor, and many areas. And if you want to help our SMEs, actually having MNCs here, whether from US or from other developed countries, is actually helpful to our SMEs, because it provides opportunities for our SMEs. We shouldn't see this as a zero-sum game. We can help both the SMEs and also the MNCs to grow, and then we help our workers to have better jobs. So the second point I'll make, Mr. Trump, is that the US should remain engaged in Asia, both for defense and security, but also in the area of the economic development and investments. MAGA should not stand for Make America Go Away. We want America to remain engaged. And the third point I will say to Mr. Trump is this, that Singapore may be small, but we are not without agency. we have options. And, you know, earlier we were discussing about how we seek out new options, new trading partners, new trade links. I think that is part of what we have to demonstrate, because as we know, Mr. Trump is a very tough negotiator. And if he knows that we have no other options, he will squeeze us hard. So the best way to negotiate with a tough negotiator is to demonstrate that we have options. We have like-minded partners that we can work with, and we can look at how we can continue to open up, forge new trade links. We can look at how we can speed up our enterprise and workforce transformation to help our companies become more productive, to help our workers become better skilled. And we can also look at how we can team up. Team up domestically between our tripartite partners, but also team up internationally with the region and with other like-minded partners. I would also like to make a point about the importance of unity domestically. Because for us to be able to deal with other countries with confidence and from a position of strength, Mr. Trump must know that when we negotiate with him, we have the support and backing of Singaporeans. If he thinks that domestically we are not united, that will be a point of weakness for Singapore. So if we want to be able to navigate in this more complex, uncertain world, and to be able to deal with tough negotiators like Mr. Trump, we have to demonstrate to them that Singapore, domestically, our people, we will support the policies, we will stay united. There's a lot of stability within our country. To take a united stand, we are one team Singapore. Then I think we will be able to negotiate well and fight for the best interests of Singapore and Singaporeans. Thank you.
Okay. Well, we are going for a short break now, but when we return, we'll tackle the thorny issue of immigration.
From the digital revolution to climate crisis.
Floodwaters are destroying my home.
Witness stories on how we're adapting, surviving and thriving in this new era. This May on CMA. Remember this sound? See Singapore's wild journey from dialing up to dialing in to an AI-powered future where the only thing growing faster than tech is our love for avoiding direct human interaction, the internet and us. Billions made in a single stream. But what's the real cost of going viral? Take a look behind the scenes as Asia's top live streamers battle the pressure to stay hashtag trending in. Secret lives of live streamers. Rising sea levels, polluted coastlines and cities on the brink. Meet the Asian mayors leading the charge against existential threats to their cities.
They need to do more.
And watch how they inspire each other in the Future Proofers. This May on CMA.
Indoor air is full of pollutants, especially formaldehyde. New Dulux Ambience All Air Clean helps to destroy formaldehyde with pure air technology. Dulux Ambience All Air Clean. Clean your air.
Pressed for time? Understand today's top stories fast. Dive deeper when you want. Go to cna.asia or download the app now.
Welcome back. We're now discussing immigration and the job market. For this topic, I'm joined by Professor Jessica Pan from the National University of Singapore. She's a labour economist and highly recognised for her research on immigration. Now, my second question to all the parties. As the Singapore economy transforms, some workers could be left behind. The Singapore economy is also heavily reliant on foreigners. How would your party balance these two challenges? And we shall start with you, Mr. Lin. Your 1 minute starts now.
Thank you. PAR has always been known as the party that emphasizes, insists on priority for jobs for Singaporeans. We make no concession on that whatsoever. Now, we will insist that the employer must employ Singaporeans first. Only if they are able to show that no Singaporean is capable of doing that job should they be allowed to employ the foreigner. We now have an economy, we now have fostered an economy where employers actually prefer hiring foreigners to locals. We want to stop that. We want to use our vast resources to nurture our local talent and make sure that they get the best paying jobs. We are not against foreigners, but Singaporeans will always come first. Thank you.
Moving on. Ms. Tan, your 1 minute starts now.
PSP, we have never and we will never argue for a closed Singapore. We are aware that Singapore needs talents from other countries. But in our opinion, it should be done in a way that is complementary to our Singaporean workforce. So we need to find a fair balance between making sure that our local workers are gainfully employed and making sure that we have the foreign talent that we need. So PSP has proposals for that. They include a strengthening of the current fair consideration framework itself, imposing a modest EP levy like that for S-passes and work permits, and also imposing a quota on EP holders, which are also in existence for S-pass and work permit holders. So we believe that these proposals will allow our party to balance these two challenges that have been mentioned. Thank you.
Mr. Philemon, your 1 minute starts now.
I agree with Mr. Chi that in a turbulent world, unity is very important, but unity is not monopoly. He said earlier that we must remain an open society. I also agree with him on that. Singapore has got no choice but to remain an open society. But in an open society, we must also make sure that the privilege of citizenship is better accentuated, because sometimes people don't feel that what is claimed to be in the national interest is not in the people's interest. So, I mean, for example, why do foreign wives of Singapore citizens only get LTVP and not PRs or citizenship? That is a very important question to ask. I mean, it shows us that you need to accentuate the privilege of citizenship.
Next, Mr. Tung, your 1 minute starts now.
I think it's important to remember that immigration has to remain the cornerstone of Singapore society. It is an important part of what we need to keep as a part of our DNA to welcome talent and friends from all around the world. But we must ensure that our immigration policy lifts Singaporeans and not sidelines them. And so to achieve this balance, one of the things that we've put forward is the idea of ensuring a more deliberate skills transfer between foreign talent and our local workforce. And I think this is important, right? Because sometimes there are industries that we want to chase that we may not have the talent pool just yet to be able to properly capture. And it's well and good for us to allow then foreign talent to come in the first generation of employees that we have to be able to staff out and really try and make a dent in that particular industry. But we must create the right incentives such that companies have a reason to then start trying to transfer that skills across, so that while the first generation of workers may be foreign-born, after that, you may have opportunities for Singaporeans to take more of the jobs.
Mr. Chi, your 4 minutes starts now.
In all our economic and manpower policies, Singaporeans remain at the heart of everything we do. We understand the concerns of our workers. When we open our economy to the world, because we need to trade with the world, there will be competition. But as my fellow panelists have mentioned, we do need to stay open, and we do need to welcome complementary international talent to come to Singapore. So what we need to do is not to close our doors, but to help our businesses and our workers to stay competitive. And that is what the PAP will focus on. Put workers first, ensure they remain relevant and employable, because every worker matters. Now, over the years, we have built up and strengthened our safety nets, and we pay careful attention to those who fall through the cracks. The PAP will have their backs, will always have their backs. And we will put in place comprehensive support for those who need a helping hand, as Mr. Tung mentioned, a trampoline, so that they can bounce back, they can get better jobs, they can earn a better living. And we achieve all this through our strong model of tripartism, which we have nurtured since day one. This is a hallmark of the PAP government: unions, businesses, government working closely together to deliver what is best for Singapore and Singaporeans. And we demonstrate our strength not through confrontation, but through collaboration. And this is something that, if you look around the world, few other countries are able to achieve this outcome. Now, the opposition have taken a different approach. Some of them have proposed a minimum wage. We believe that the government's progressive wage model is more practical and more effective in helping workers. Instead of a one-size-fits-all minimum wage, which may have unintended consequences, causing job losses, we use progressive wages. There's a wage ladder and there's a skills ladder so that the workers improve their productivity and earn higher wages in a more sustainable manner. It's also better for the workers in the longer term. Now, the Workers' Party has called for independent unions following the practices of other countries. Now, our unions are already independent. So I think what the Workers' Party is really calling for is a more confrontational relationship between the unions and the government. I would like to ask, why would that be good for Singapore if we have that outcome? How would that affect our reputation and our economy if we have that outcome? Now, our policies are pro-Singapore and pro-Singaporeans, but we must avoid a zero-sum mentality. It is not about locals versus foreigners. It is about how we can work to grow the economic pie, to enlarge the economic pie, so that there's more that we can share with Singaporeans, more and better job opportunities, better wages. Now, we will certainly want to help our businesses too, help them to transform. They need the workers too, as Mr. Teng mentioned. We need them to improve their productivity. We need to help them to expand overseas, including our SMEs. So this is something that we want to do, is pro-business and pro-workers. Now, in this more turbulent and uncertain world, we will need unity and stability. And we need to forge our own way forward. Not welfare, but workfare. Not one minimum wage, but multiple wage and skills ladders for different industries. And certainly not zero sum, but looking at how we can enlarge the pie for all Singaporeans. And when we have economic growth, it is very important to ensure that the growth can benefit as many segments of our population as possible, so that everyone can feel that there's an uplift from a rising tide. And this is the PAP's way of doing things, through strong tripartism, sound policies that achieve good outcomes in a sustainable way. We enable all Singaporeans to be able to share the fruits of our sustainable economic progress. Thank you.
Professor Pan, your question for PAR, please.
So, PAR proposes protecting Singaporean workers by regulating the foreign workforce and encouraging businesses to invest in local workforce development. How would your party resolve this tension between supporting local SMEs and stricter access to foreign skilled manpower?
Professor. Mr. Lim, your 1 minute starts
Professor,
now.
Professor, PAP government has entered into very harmful treaties, such as SECA, which PAR is totally opposed and once abolished. We may talk about being open to foreign workers, but the balance has tilted too far in the last two decades. We want SECA abolished. And at the end of the day, my answer to your question is very much the same as my answer to Ms. Edwards' question earlier. We want priority for that Singaporean worker. We want that Singaporean worker to get the best paying jobs. If no Singaporean worker is willing to do the job, we are prepared to allow that employer to employ the foreigner. We are not going to negotiate on that.
Professor, your question for PSP, please.
So the PSP, as I understand, proposes tighter controls on EP holders, such as you mentioned a quota, a levy, and higher qualifying salaries, to ensure that Singaporeans are not displaced from good jobs. How would your party ensure that such policies do not limit access to essential foreign skills and reduce Singapore's competitiveness as a global business hub?
Ms. Tan, your 1 minute starts now.
Our proposals in this respect are actually not entirely new or different from the government's proposals, because they have introduced quotas for S-Pass and work permit holders. They introduced the fair consideration framework. They also launched Compass in the 14th Parliament and successively raised the qualifying salary for EP holders. Did these measures affect MNC investment into Singapore? Well, if we look at the statistics, foreign direct investment into Singapore has continued to increase from 2020 to 2023. So in this way, we are confident that our proposals, which are a strengthening, for example, of the FCF itself and imposing levies and quotas on EP holders, will not limit access to essential foreign skills and reduce Singapore's attractiveness as a global business hub.
Professor, your next question is for RDU.
So RDU proposes a shift away from GDP-focused growth and calls for a citizens' first hiring policy. Could you tell us a bit more about what specific policies your party would implement to ensure that Singaporeans continue to have access to good, secure jobs in this new economic model?
Philemon, your 1 minute starts now.
I actually want to thank Mr. Chi for emphasising how important safety nets are. But surely, 6K for 6 months for those that are retrenched is the flimsiest of safety nets for Singaporean workers. So I think job legislation as proposed by the PAP, it aims at fair chance for Singaporeans, but RDU's Citizens First Hiring Policy is a little bit different. It is aimed at fair rights of all workers that are in Singapore. If you have to be considered against the foreigner, I have worked in the US for several years. I've worked in Canada for a bit. And I know that citizens are preferred over foreigners. And there's certain legislation in place that citizens get priority. And that's what we are emphasizing, and that is what we are calling for, and that's why RDU's proposals are different.
Professor Pan, your next question goes to WP.
So the Workers' Party has called for stronger emphasis on skills transfer, as you articulated just now, as a condition for work passes. So how does this actually differ from existing frameworks such as the COMPASS framework? And how would your party implement this policy and measure skills transfer in practice?
Thank you.
Mr. Tun, your 1 minute starts now.
Thank you. And I know there was a discussion around this, I think, in Parliament a while ago around how it's difficult to measure. I think our position is that there are concrete steps that we can take to get a better pulse on what's actually happening and actually incent companies in a different way. We have specific ideas such as, you know, requiring companies to invest in training for potential local employees. This is measurable. We can also ensure some kind of mentorship pairing with local and foreign employees. This is, again, measurable. We know these are not perfect ways of getting at the problem or getting at what's actually going on. But we shouldn't let perfection be the enemy of the good. I think these are methods that we can get a better sense of what's going on, actually trying to incent and measure what's going on a little bit better, and allow us to then shape policy as a consequence of that. We think that's a way forward. We think that's a way in which we can actually calibrate that.
Professor Pan, now your question for PAP.
So, despite implementing, you know, very sophisticated policies to really, you know, manage the quantity and quality of immigrants, immigration in Singapore still remains a hot-button issue. So, my question is, what more can the PAP do to address Singaporeans' concerns and strike this, you know, right balance?
Mr. Chi, your 4 minutes starts now.
Thank you. I think Singaporeans, the key message I want to get across, Singaporeans remain at the heart of our immigration and manpower policies. We do give priority to our citizens, to locals. There are many schemes in place that are only extended to locals and not to foreigners, whether it's on training, whether is it on supporting them when they lose their jobs, the safety nets. We design our manpower policies with Singaporeans at the heart of these policies. But at the same time, we also need to understand, as many of my panelists have acknowledged, that we do need immigration and we do need foreigners to come in to complement our local workforce. So the key is not to close our economy and to protect the jobs and cause economic disruption, because that in the end will cause Singapore's businesses to lose competitiveness and they may then move elsewhere, and then we lose the jobs, not just for the foreigners, but also for the local workers. So that is what we must avoid. Ms. Tan mentioned earlier that the PAP has done many good schemes to help workers, and I thank her for that, for acknowledging that. That's indeed what we have been doing over the years, to put in place stronger protection for local workers. But there is one difference between what we have done and what the PSP is proposing, in that when we come up with these policies, we have very close consultation with our tripartite partners. That's why tripartism is very important, because we are able to discuss with employers, with unions. So when we move on these policies, we know where the right balancing point is, where the right calibration is, so that, you know, you don't go overboard, you are still able to offer the protection, and yet at the same time, don't lose competitiveness. And this is a hallmark of the PAP government. It is important for us to protect our workers against discrimination, put safeguards in place, and importantly, in this fast-changing world, to help Singaporeans to reskill and upskill so that they can stay employable. Lifelong learning for lifelong employability. Now, we can't preserve all jobs. That's not possible. But we must protect all Singaporeans. So the PAP government has implemented many schemes over the years, and this is an area where, if necessary, we will continue to do so. But we do not want to do it in a manner which would then erode our competitiveness, because that is not in the interest of Singapore and Singaporeans. Now, we also want to make sure we empower Singaporeans to develop their fullest potential by reskilling and upskilling. And the best way to do this is to invest in their skills. It's not just through SkillsFuture, that's just one of the schemes. We also have many other, for example, career conversion program, overseas market immersion programs, skills transfer frameworks, which may coincide with what Mr. Teng spoke about as well. And over the past decade, if you look at the number of EP and S-Pass holders, this increased by 38,000. But if you look at how many resident PMET jobs have been added to our economy, it was 382,000. More than 10 times larger than the number of increase in EP and S-Pass holders. So this is a clear demonstration that when we adopt this approach, grow the pie, actually we benefit our people even more. Now, I think it's important for us to also take a look at, in this current time, when we are in a more turbulent, uncertain environment, what signals are we sending to the rest of the world? If we want to tap on all these new opportunities that may open up, what signals are we sending to the world? Is Singapore still welcoming to foreign investments, to foreign talent? Are we still welcoming to integrate new immigrants, yet at the same time offering the safeguards and protection for our people? I think those are important questions that we have to ask ourselves. Thank you.
Okay. Now, before we go for a short break, in response to my question earlier, Mr. Philemon said foreign wives of Singapore citizens only get LTVP and not PRs or citizenship. Well, actually, LTVP is not a prerequisite for PR or Singapore citizenship. Now, when we return, the hot button issue of the cost of living. Stay tuned.
Imagine a Singapore without the internet.
You wouldn't be able to pay bills, you wouldn't be able to check your flights, you wouldn't be able to do anything.
Well, you don't have to imagine it. It was real.
That's a fact.
Until someone decided in 1994.
We're gonna wire up the entire island.
We went from this.
Dial-up means that you get a landline, you hear this.
To this.
Suddenly you have Wi-Fi and it's like, oh my God.
It was incredible. It was like...
Science fiction becoming reality.
But did we stop there? Of course not. Think cross-country surgery.
Today, internet connection allows the surgeon to perform the surgery from anywhere in the world.
And water that tastes like vodka.
We put this together to trick their brain, basically.
What's next? The Internet and Us. Premiering 10th May, Saturday on CNA.
My sis has always been the good child. When I left for an overseas education, Jane helped build the family business into a thriving corporation.
It's time he comes home. John has returned. So it's time I introduce my successor, the new CEO, Jane.
Ma believes that legacies are earned, not inherited.
Welcome back. We are now talking about the cost of living, and with me is Associate Professor Terence Ho from the Singapore University of Social Sciences. He's an expert in fiscal policy and has also served in various policy roles in the public service. So my question to all the parties is, many say that the GST hikes contributed to inflation in recent years. Yet, taxes are a key source of revenue to finance services and infrastructure in healthcare, housing and transport. How would you propose to finance the growing needs of Singaporeans? Now, Mr. Lim, your 1 minute starts now.
Ms. Edwards, there was absolutely no need for the GST hikes to have been imposed in the midst of a huge storm. For 2024, we had a budget surplus of 6.4 billion. when GST raised about $3.5 billion. From 1999 until 2019, the budget surplus was $40 billion altogether. If you look at the difference between the CPF annualized returns, what is paid out to the stakeholders, and what the government keeps, it is another $13.4 billion. And every year, $25 billion go towards special transfers. And on top of that, if you raise the NIRC by 10%, you get another $5 billion there. That's a lot of money to finance free healthcare, free education, free school meals, as PA has suggested.
Ms. Tan, your 1 minute starts now.
PSP's manifesto contains more than 60 proposals, and it also includes proposals which will increase revenue for the government. One, we have proposed introducing a modest EP levy of $1,200 per month on EP holders to further level the playing field between Singaporean and foreign PMATs. Under PSP's affordable home scheme, HDB will no longer need to pay land costs used for BTOs into the past reserves, and we will also eliminate a large part of HDB's deficit arising from having to provide subsidies to buyers, which is now paid for using our budget. We have also proposed to amortize the revenue from government land sales for commercial and industrial land so that it can be used as revenue in the budget over the duration of the lease instead of putting it straight all into the reserves. And until that is done, the money can be invested with reserves and can still generate NIRC.
Mr. Philmon, your 1 minute starts now.
I absolutely agree with the PAP government that we should not erode our competitiveness. And I think the kind of tax ecosystem we have or choose to adopt go towards ensuring that. I think taxes are a key source of revenue, and there is no denying that we need to look at taxation and how it's implemented and at which level. There are no questions about that. But it's important to ask who these taxes are aimed at. There is a perception that it is aimed more at the ordinary Singaporeans than at the wealthy, the billionaire class, the big companies. Wealth is not taxed enough. So those are the things that we are calling attention to in this election. People are looking at that, and that to us is very important.
Next, Mr. Tung, your 1 minute starts now.
Thank you. It's almost like a meta question, right, that you're asking us, which is, how do we best fund the needs of our nation? And I think we've been clear that the decision in 2022 to increase the GST coming out of a high, record high 6% inflation was the wrong tool used at the wrong time. And that decision placed a tremendous burden on the average Singapore family that they're still trying to dig themselves out of. We believed then, and we believe today, that there were other methods and there were other pathways to get the revenue we needed. We've suggested, for example, changing the NIRC formula from 50% to 60% to allow a little bit of buffer there. We've talked about implementing a minimum corporate tax rate that's in line with most of the other nations around the world to allow us to be able to have, once again, a little bit of buffer over there. These are some of the ideas that we put forward to be able to drive revenue in a way that's different from the decisions that have been made thus far.
Mr. Chi, your 4 minutes start now.
Thank you. We understand that cost of living is a key concern for many Singaporeans. Because Singapore imports most of what we consume, so we also import global inflation. Now, we can't stop global inflation, although in recent years, in recent periods, it has come down. But I want to give this assurance to all Singaporeans. The PAP government will continue to provide support for Singaporeans to cope with cost of living for as long as it is necessary. Now, we maintain a strong Singapore dollar, and this has helped to mitigate the impact of imported inflation. And we also provided support for Singaporeans and businesses through the assurance package and also the cost of living support. We have different schemes, the CDC vouchers, the cost of living special payment, the SG60 package, and also there's the permanent GST vouchers scheme aimed at helping lower and middle income Singaporeans. And we also, for many of us, provide additional local assistance within our constituency, within the community. Now, in the medium to longer term, I beg your pardon, the PAP believes that the best way to cope with rising prices is to ensure we can grow our economy. Why? Because then we can enable our businesses to do well, and we can enable our people to earn higher wages. Higher wages, wages that exceed the rate of inflation, so what we call real wage growth. I think that's very fundamental. And we will continue to invest heavily in bringing investments, creating quality jobs, helping to upskill our workers, helping our businesses to transform, and especially to look after lower wage workers. So if you look at our track record, from 2019 to 2024, during this five-year period, the 20th percentile considered lower wage worker has a 5.9% real wage growth. That means after accounting for inflation. And at the median, it's 3.6% real wage growth. So these are real outcomes that we have achieved through the PAP's policies. I think in addition, we also want to help Singaporeans to be able to manage the major expenditure items and ensure that these remain affordable and accessible to all. Now, 8 in 10 families buy their first HDB flats, and they can pay just using CPF, the monthly mortgages, with little or no cash outlay. 7 in 10 patients, when they go to our public healthcare institutions, they do not pay cash. 8 in 10 pay less than $100 of out-of-pocket expenditure. 90% of our public education costs are subsidized. Now, the PAP is able to achieve this because we exercise fiscal discipline. And this is where we fundamentally differ from some of the proposals from the opposition. The PAP's view is that the current generation's needs should be covered by this generation's resources. We must not borrow or gamble on the savings and reserves of future generations. And this is why we decided to raise the GST. It was a difficult decision, as I explained recently, because no government or political party likes to raise taxes. But we had to do so because we needed the additional revenue to support the healthcare needs of our seniors in an ageing population. And we make sure that the GST increase is packaged together with support measures that can help most households to be able to mitigate the cost, the increase due to the GST. And for lower and middle income households, because of the permanent GST schemes and the assurance package, they actually pay a much lower effective GST rate than 9%. In fact, lower than even 7%. Now, we have different proposals from the opposition parties, rolling back the GST, exempting certain items from GST, loosening the use of the reserves. I would like Singaporeans to think about whether these proposals are sustainable and whether it will mean Singaporeans will end up having less now and less for the future. Thank you.
Professor Ho, your question for PAR, please.
Okay, Mr. Lim, PAR has suggested implementing price controls on necessities such as food, healthcare and transport. How would you respond to those who argue that such controls could lead to over-demand for and under-supply of these essentials?
Professor Lin, your 1 minute starts now.
I think we may have a difference of opinion here. I do not recall my party ever proposing that we should have price controls on necessities. What we have said is that we want to remove GST on the necessities, such as food and groceries, medical care, health care, and so forth. So my answer to your question will pretty much be the same as my answer to Ms. Edwards. But I would like to use the remaining time I have on this question to say this. It is of grave concern to PAR that we must reduce the cost of living. And one way is to reduce the cost of housing, which burdens our young families and other age groups as well. And what is our proposal there? First of all, we are going to stop this surge in resale prices by stopping permanent residents from buying HDB because they are the cause of the surge in price, which then pulls along the BTO price. And secondly, we are...
Your time is up, Mr. Thank Lim. You. Professor, your question for PSP, please.
So, Ms. Tan, PSP has proposed a new housing model that excludes land costs from the price of new flats. How would you address concerns about fairness between existing homeowners and new home buyers, as well as among new home buyers purchasing flats in different locations across Singapore?
Ms. Tan, your 1 minute starts now.
On the first point, we would like to reassure Singaporeans that the AHS will not cause a crash in the resale market. The supply of AHS flats will be the same as the supply of BTO flats today. So even after 5 years, AHS flats will make up less than 10% of the total HDB flat supply. And more importantly, the resale flat market will still be underpinned by a large pool of demand from buyers who are ineligible for BTO flats, buyers who are unsuccessful in balloting for BTO flats, buyers who wish to live in specific locations, whether due to proximity to schools or their parents, PRs and buyers who wish to upgrade to a larger flat. And on the second point, HDB, under our scheme, HDB will sell new flats to Singaporeans at a price equal to the construction cost of the flat, but plus a premium determined by the location of the flats, so that flats in different areas will not be priced the same.
Well, back to you, Professor. A question for RDU, please.
Yeah. So, Mr. Feilemann, RDU has proposed a citizen's dividend, an unconditional cash transfer that serves as a financial safety net for all. How will this be financed, particularly in years where there are no budget surpluses?
I think,
Mr. Feilemann, your 1 minute starts now.
Thank you. I think Mr. Chi has tried to broad stroke all the opposition as being the same and one. I can tell you that RDU is very different from my friend here, Mr. Lim Tien, and my friends at the table from the Workers' Party and the PSP. And I'm very thankful for Mr. Chi for acknowledging that they are working on real wage growth, and that's important because in the next 10 years, 1.2 billion workers are coming in, and there are only 400 million jobs that are available. So the citizens' dividend actually will be financed through the surpluses. For two straight years in a row, we have over $6 billion of surpluses, and we can use that to start a pilot on the citizens' dividend, because in the coming years, there will be a lot of pressure on the work, on the job, on the steady incomes that Singaporeans will earn, and citizens' dividend will give them the peace of mind that they are in safe hands.
Professor, your question for the WP next.
So, Mr. Tung, WP has put forward suggestions to manage the costs of various key services, such as utilities, healthcare and transportation. Which among these proposals do you consider the most pressing and why?
Mr. Tung, your 1 minute starts now.
I'm sorry to throw that question back at you, but I think it's quite difficult to make a decision here. I think all of those buckets of costs that you've kind of called out are equally important and differently important to each individual Singapore family, depending on their own spending patterns. And so for us, I think, and we have in our manifesto, ideas of how to make a dent in each one of these, and we invite all Singaporeans to go online to look at our manifesto and see how we've actually achieved that. One that I want to call out is how we've proposed for kind of tiered utility pricing to ensure that Singaporeans who use less, who are from smaller households perhaps, will pay a lower rate than those that use more. There's a benefit to incentivizing the right kind of socially conscious behavior, but it's also going to help relieve the pressure upon them. Ultimately, we think that if there has been an ability by the government to put forward and increase prices across all of these simultaneously, there's no reason why we cannot similarly roll them back at the same time.
Professor Ho's last question goes to the PAP.
Yes, Mr. Chi. With the economic challenges ahead, does the PAP foresee a need for further short-term support or longer-term structural measures to help Singaporeans cope with the cost of living? And what forms of support do you think are most needed? And can these be sustained if the weak economic conditions were to be prolonged?
Mr. Chi, your 4 minutes starts now.
I think we will need both sets of proposals, Professor Ho. We do need to take care of the immediate concerns, look after Singaporeans, but we must also be prepared for the future. So if you look at this year's budget, $143 billion, about 5% is targeted at addressing immediate concerns, and the remaining helping to prepare Singapore's economy and society for the future, helping our companies, helping our workers, investing in our infrastructure. So that will be the approach that we will take. Now, specifically, I think there are a few areas that I think are important. Skills future. I mentioned this earlier. Investing in the skills of our workers, I think, is the best way to help them to cope with all the changes and to help them to be able to seek out new opportunities. With new technologies, new investments, there will be many new jobs created, but our people need to then be ready to take on these new jobs. So we need to invest heavily in the education and the lifelong learning to help our people. We also need to make sure that we help our seniors, because we have an aging population. We want to look after our seniors, and the healthcare needs, retirement adequacy, I think those are very important. And we want to make sure that we have a good, safe environment for our seniors. So this will also include housing, public transport, making sure that our environment is safe and accessible for our seniors. Importantly, I think in this more turbulent world, we must maintain a strong social compact. And this is what PM has outlined in Forward Singapore. We want to grow the economy, but that's not the sole target, the sole objective. With growth, we have more resources. We then want to take some of these resources to invest in strengthening our social safety nets and building our social compact so that we can remain united. And if we are united, we then create the conditions to be able to grow, to be able to instill confidence in investors and businesses to invest in Singapore. So I think these two are not mutually exclusive. They actually go together hand in hand. They are mutually reinforcing. It's a positive feedback loop if you do it well. And we intend to do that. I would also like to highlight that, you know, for the housing, what Ms. Tan mentioned earlier, the affordable housing scheme, and if you look at it carefully, it is not just a buy now, pay later scheme. It's actually more like a buy now, pay more later scheme, because if you're going to sell later, you will have to pay with interest. So I think you need to have some care in terms of how this will affect home buyers. And Ms. Tan said that the PSP is of the view that this proposal won't crash the market. I would like to maybe raise a question to ask Ms. Tan, how would you know that it wouldn't crash the market? There is a risk that such a move could have a negative impact on the housing market affecting existing homeowners. And certainly, I think my residents in Bishan Toa Payoh and also our residents in Marymount would be very concerned with such a proposal. I would also like to touch on the point about corporate tax and the point made about we have a surplus. We have to understand why we have a surplus. It's mainly from corporate tax. Because we have done well, we've grown our economy, so the corporate taxes have increased. But now with a more uncertain, more turbulent world, how can we be so confident that this trend will continue? It's a question mark. We hope it will continue. And if it continues, and we do have some fiscal surpluses, we see that as a good thing, because then that will allow us to do more to help Singaporeans. And as for our reserves, I've mentioned earlier, I think it's very important for us not to see our reserves as something that we can keep tapping on every time we need money. This is something that has been accumulated by previous generations. It is something that will help us to tide over difficult periods. And it's important for us to safeguard this very precious asset for future generations.
Okay, we are taking our final break. But when we return, each candidate will deliver their wrap-up remarks.
Fancy a Michelin-recommended lunch for $6?
For a hawker centre, this is pretty good standard.
How about vegetarian delights at a temple downtown?
This should be a mock pot, right? This looks like the real thing.
Or check out what's trending in Singapore.
I come 3 times a week to the Bugis area because we have like a lot of halal cafes.
Lunch with us tonight on CNA.
With the uncertainties of the financial world, where does our economy truly stand? Keep up to date with the latest market trends and get the in-depth analysis that you need to understand the forces driving the global economies. Stay informed on the developments of the business world. Asia Business on Asia Tonight, weeknights on CNA. This segment is brought to you by Standard Chartered Priority Banking.
Hi, I'm Chris, and I'm an urban farmer. I spent the last 10 years travelling the world in search of a better food system.
It's good.
In Growing Well Season 1, I explored how to bring food and nature closer to people.
Yay.
Plant in the seeds.
You can definitely eat the flowers.
Wow.
In Season 2, I rediscovered the culture in agriculture. Along my journey, I've met many inspiring kindred spirits.
We have to come up with smarter, cleverer ways to grow good food.
Mm. We want to introduce a sustainable model for aquaculture industry.
This season, I've got a crazier, bigger, bolder idea. I want to grow food in and on water. and I'm calling this chapter Project Castaway. Watch Growing Wild Project Castaway on demand at cna.asia.
From the digital revolution to climate crisis,
floodwaters are destroying my home.
Witness stories on how we're adapting, surviving, and thriving in this new era. This May on CNA. Remember this sound? See Singapore's wild journey from dialing up to dialing in to an AI-powered future, where the only thing growing faster than tech is our love for avoiding direct human interaction, the internet and us. Billions made in a single stream. But what's the real cost of going viral? Take a look behind the scenes as Asia's top live streamers battle the pressure to stay hashtag trending in. Secret lives of live streamers. Rising sea levels, polluted coastlines, and cities on the brink. Meet the Asian mayors leading the charge against existential threats to their cities.
They need to do more.
And watch how they inspire each other in the Future Proofers. This May on CNA.
Welcome back. I'll now invite each candidate to deliver their closing remarks. Why should Singaporeans vote for you and your party? Mr. Lim, your 2 minutes starts now.
My fellow Singaporeans, next Saturday, 1 week from now, you are going to walk into that ballot box and you're going to have to make a decision. Many of you will walk in with a lot of anger because for the past 5 years, you have been put through hell by this government. I ask you to ask yourselves a few questions. Do you think your life will be better 5 years from now if you continue to vote for the PAP? Do you think your cost of living will go down if you continue to vote for the PAP? Will public housing be more affordable? Now, you know the answer. The PAP will never be able to get your cost of living, cost of public housing down. PAR has proposals to do so through our proposals for free healthcare, free school meals, free education, and our proposal for public housing. I differ here from my friend, Ms. Tan, on our ways of reducing public housing. On the BTOs, we are going to gradually reduce land costs because we do not want to crash the market. So we are going to reduce it, for example, 5% every 6 months and allow the market to adjust. But we are going to bring public housing costs down. And there's a second very important reason why you should vote for us. The PAP MPs are like a range of extinct volcanoes. There's no fire in them. Not a single PAP MP challenged the GST hikes. PAR's candidates will. And I look forward to cross-examining Mr. Chi, Mr. Shanmugam, and his other colleagues in Parliament if I am elected into Parliament. Thank you.
Next, Ms. Tan, your 2 minutes starts now.
Singapore is facing challenges. Our total fertility rate is at a historic low of 0.97. Singaporeans are stressed and burnt out from the high and rising cost of living, job insecurity, and global economic shifts. They are getting married later, if at all, and hesitating to have children whom they know will have to face a stressful education system. We believe that our lives can be better. To face any challenge, whether from domestic or foreign sources, we need unity in diversity. We need robust and constructive debate in Parliament to find the best way forward for Singapore. And that can only happen if we have sufficient alternative voices. The Progress Singapore Party is a responsible opposition party that has and will continue to fight hard with well-researched proposals to improve the lives of Singaporeans. We do not oppose for the sake of opposing. We have supported the PAP government in passing legislation when it is in the national interest. Our manifesto and the work of our NCMPs in the 14th Parliament are clear proofs of that. the PSP had filed more than 700 PQs, raised 8 full motions and 6 adjournment motions. Our proposals include seeking to lower the cost of living and housing, improving job priority for Singaporeans, providing more pathways to success for our children, and bringing about better work-life balance for family life. The presence of sufficient and credible elected opposition MPs in Parliament is an irreplaceable requirement to ensure not just strong governance, but also good governance. More PSP MPs means more voices to fight for you and ensure transparency and accountability from the government, while any losing PAP MP will still serve you as a grassroots advisor.
Next, Mr. Philemon, your 2 minutes starts now.
Thank you. When Singaporeans go to the polling booth on May the 3rd, they have to remember this. They are not voting for Red Dot United or for the People's Action Party. You are voting for yourself. And the issues are clear. Why do we have to cope with the ever-shrinking HDB flats, which are increasing in prices? And while the ministers, the well-connected, the super-rich and the billionaire class get to live in black and white bungalows the size of 4, 5, 6 football fields, where is the equality or the equity in that? Why do our children need to put up with unfair competition for jobs from people who are non-citizens? Why can't we own a car while the rich get to zip down our roads in luxury cars? These issues are before us. The wealthy get to transfer their wealth. Many of these issues, $5.2 trillion, will go from the super rich to their children. So these are the issues that are before us. And we too are calling for a new social compact, collective prosperity, citizens' dividend, a comprehensive housing reset, and caring healthcare and civil liberties. We think that these will put Singaporeans first in our own country, the only home that we have. We believe that this will make Singapore fairer. So we call on Singaporeans to vote for themselves, to vote for RDU, for we are your vehicle to make Singapore better. Thank you.
Now, Mr. Tung, your 2 minutes starts now.
First of all, thank you for the opportunity to be at this roundtable. I think from the conversation, it's very clear that we know there are many challenges ahead of us. A lot of uncertainties, a lot of unknowns, especially on the global front. It is with this context and because of this context that we believe it is more important than ever to build a system that will get policies right. Because in this context, there is far less margin for error. And to get it right, we need more perspectives, we need more voices to ensure that blind spots are not missed, mistakes are not made. And if we accept that no one has a monopoly on good ideas, which I think we all do, then maybe none of us should have a monopoly in Parliament. So that's why we're asking you to vote for the Workers' Party, to allow us to bring our brand of rational, constructive politics into Parliament and deliver for the Singaporean people every day. We'll be able to ask questions that PAP MPs will not ask and keep the PAP on their tippy toes, essentially. Let us be clear-eyed. Come May 4th, the PAP will be government, and more than likely, they will have a supermajority. And so this election really isn't about the PAP. It's about strengthening our parliamentary system to ensure we build one that delivers policies that will allow us to safeguard against the shocks and challenges that may come forward ahead of us. And that's the reason why we're asking for every Singaporean today, if they have a chance to vote for the Workers' Party on May the 3rd, to vote for the Workers' Party, working for Singapore. Thank you.
And we end with Mr. Chi. Your 8 minutes starts now.
My fellow Singaporeans, you have heard many ideas and many arguments today. You have to decide which one works best for Singapore. More importantly, you have to decide what kind of politics you would like to see and what kind of values and principles Singapore should be governed by. Now, my counterparts have proposed various views. Some are different shades of PAP policies, others fundamentally different. But I think what is important, and I hope we can all agree, is that Singapore must not have politics and policies that will divide our society, that will polarise our society, pit one segment against another. That will not be good. So we must not support xenophobic and divisive politics and policies in Singapore. The Workers' Party pitches themselves as a responsible opposition. They imitate the PAP's policies and positions, and sometimes they improvise with an occasional half-step to the left or to the right, depending on how the wind blows, because they want to score political points. I understand. Their slogan is working for Singapore, but if you examine some of their proposals carefully, many of their proposals actually don't work. Their positions have been inconsistent, whether on GST, on housing, on fiscal policies that eventually would end up eroding our reserves. And they like to claim credit for policies that are implemented by the PAP, but they will not take responsibility when their proposals turn out wrong. For example, when the HDB resale market was soft before COVID, they recommended that the government should build much fewer HDB flats. Now imagine if we had listened to what the Workers' Party had proposed, if we had taken their advice, stopped building BTO flats ahead of time, more Singaporeans would have to wait longer for their flats. So fortunately, we did not listen to that advice. We went ahead, we built, but because of COVID, there was a disruption to the supply of flats. But Minister Desmond Lee has been working very hard together with the MND and HDB team, and they have built more than 100,000 flats, and they will continue to build, and there will be more BTO flats coming to meet the demand of Singaporeans. The Workers' Party also called for removal of statutory retirement age. But if you think through carefully, you're actually removing a safeguard for older workers. Why? Because today, with the statutory retirement age, employers cannot dismiss workers before they reach that age. So when you remove the retirement age, your intentions may be good, but you end up actually unintentionally causing more problems for the people you are trying to help. We, in turn, do take a different approach. We put in place senior employment credit to encourage employers to hire senior workers, and we gradually increase the retirement age and also the re-employment age. We encourage employers to hire senior workers because they can continue to contribute and they can continue to lead fulfilling lives. Now, Singapore has stayed exceptional because our politics is unique. It enables good government and sound policies. So the question that faces us now is this: can we continue to uphold these standards and remain exceptional, especially in this turbulent world? We will have opposition presence in Parliament. I agree with Mr. Teng that there will not be a monopoly. There's no chance of a government having a blank cheque, but we must also not give the opposition a free pass. Make the PAP work harder, but also make the opposition work harder for you. In a system like this, voters should hold all parties to the same standards. Judge them on the quality of their proposals, judge them on the quality of their character, both PAP and opposition. Doing so, I think, would be best for Singapore, get the best outcome for Singapore and Singaporeans. For the PAP, we don't play games with Singaporeans. When we have to implement difficult policies, we will square the hard truths with you. We will tell you the truth. We will put Singapore and Singaporeans first. We will never gamble with your lives and your future. When we make promises, you know we will deliver. A strong international standing, strong tripartism, long-term planning, fiscal discipline that's sustainable, making sure that we look after not just this generation, but also future generations, including those who still can't vote, including those who are not even born yet. We have a responsibility to look after them. Now, these are the hallmarks, the cornerstones of the PAP government's leadership. And we will continue to keep faith with these principles and support Singaporeans through the stormy times ahead. I'd like to appeal to all Singaporeans. Vote for candidates of good character who can best serve you, who can best serve your constituency, who can best serve this country. Vote for the team that can form a good, effective government to secure a brighter future for you and your family. Vote for a safe pair of hands that you can trust. Vote for the PAP. Thank you.
Well, thank you all for your time and thoughts. We also hope that tonight's roundtable has helped you better understand the position and the plans of the parties represented here tonight. I'm Otelli Edwards. Join me next weekend on the results show on polling day right here on CNA. Good night.